This is the MLWRadio.com network.
Welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. We are back as a team. The last show, Dylan was on his own because I was just out there celebrating. I'm your host, Trigger. Hi. Dylan, you did a good job last time, but still I'm glad we're back here together.
I feel the exact same way, Striga. It feels complete. And last time it was like the Lariat, and now we get the Easter back, and I'm so ready to bring you the full package here to everybody on there. And I'd also like to plug on the Patreon, patreon.com/EasternLariat. I'm doing live reviews for every show, even the ones we don't cover, maybe we'll get to later together. Mm-hmm. I'm always there. You can never get rid of me. On the Eastern Lariat Patreon. So really good stuff there. It's on all the tiers too. So like I said on Twitter, basically, you're on the fence about subscribing, give that $1 option a shot. You get a lot of cool stuff this month on there. And I think I'll win you over. We'll win you over with our Rage in the Cage too, at least.
Yeah. and you'll also get the free or the early access to the Pure Lariat show. You show all about Yoshi, and you recently did a very good episode on Tokyo Yoshi Pro. I'm probably going to catch up with the Tokyo Princess Cup like next week. Matt was on there, Matt's DL on Twitter. Did a good job for his first podcast, and the first podcast in a foreign language. That's not easy to do.
No, Matt was awesome having on. I was really happy about that. Like you said, I thought he did a really good job too, and it was his first podcast, so I think I did a good job, like I said, making things as easy as possible. And with me, it's hard to be very intimidated. I'm such a jovial and lighthearted person.
And by now you're so used to doing podcasts. This is the third year in a row, I believe, that we are doing this G1 tour here on this podcast, and as you said, we will be doing the usual stuff on the free feed where we talk about two or three shows all together in one show, and you will be doing the live reviews on our new Patreon, so go there and check it out. But it's this time of the year again, Dylan, and I'm hyped for the G1 Climax, and so far, all three shows that we've seen have been very good, I thought. Quickly going back to your review of Dallas, I wanted to address that I mostly agreed with all your observations on the show. My match of the night was also Lance Archer versus Will Ospreay. I really loved the match. I thought Tanahashi and Okada did a great job too. Ibushi and Kenta, I thought was good, but they, in my opinion, wanted it to be this epic match, and it didn't really deliver that way because I thought they wanted it too much.
Yeah, they kind of. Maybe the injury had something a little bit to do with that. Yeah. They were talking about that too with Ibushi. They seemed to lose the crowd anyway, to be honest. Yeah,
that's true. It wasn't really a match that the crowd got into. And the other point was, of course, the crowd. You made the complete right call on there and saying that drawing 5,000 or under 5,000 fans to a venue like this is not good.
Yeah.
But there is a good part to the story too, I would say, because now New Japan really knows what their drawing power in the US is, and they sized it down. They went to smaller buildings for their US tour at the end of the year in September, and that's the right way to go, I thought. Hammerstein Ballroom must be a great venue for them. That should be a great crowd. But still, it was not a good draw for that evening, but drawing 5,000 fans as a Japanese company in America is still not that bad if you look at it.
I just think that they need to, basically my main point is, because I think a lot of people are throwing out a lot of different reasons about why things happened, how mm-hmm. they did. And I just, for me, I would hold off on doing these big shows. Like, yeah. I said, I kind of said, if it was me, I would try to slow down and just do one big show a year in WrestleMania. Because I feel like with AEW right now, like, they're so hot that people aren't, wrestling fans don't have as much money to travel to all of these places back to back, like over and over again.
Yeah, exactly.
Even wrestling fans, as passionate as they are not made out of money.
It's not even just AEW, because recently MLW also drew again a very big crowd for their show in Chicago. So there's a lot of competition right now, and some shows will just get lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, this one should have done better. I think they did a lot of things wrong, to be honest.
Laid it out on your last show that what it exactly was that they did wrong, and I think you were right on point there. So if you haven't listened to Dylan's solo show, go back and do that.
I'm glad you liked
it. Yeah, of course I did. But for now, we are here to talk about the days 2 and 3 of the G1 Climax. Both shows from Ota Ward Gymnasium in Tokyo, and for both nights they drew the exact same crowd, 4,074 fans, making both shows Supernova Vacancy full house. And if you're one of those people that just want to watch the G1 Climax matches, let me tell you, for this show, for the first show on July 13th, you should definitely also check out the undercard matches, because they told very crucial stories for the matches, for the G1 matches that were to come the day after. And it started out with Los Ingobernados del Japón in Evil Sanada and Bushi defeating Kota Ibushi, Will Ospreay and Yuya Uemura. And in that match, Evil specifically went for Kota Ibushi's ankle injury. You already mentioned that injury. Kota Ibushi posted a photo of it on Twitter. Evil and Sanada both were trying to expose that injury, and with success to a degree. In the end, Bushi was able to beat Uemura, and I thought it was a well laid out setup for the Evil versus Ibushi match.
Oh, that's great! I really didn't watch any of these undercard matches.
Okay, guide you through.
I went back for the one with Kenta and Tanahashi.
Ah, okay. Yeah, so the next up was Bad Luck Fale and Chase Owens against Lance Archer and Yoshinobu Kanemaru. 6 minutes package. Pile driver from Owens against Kanemaru was a good confrontation between these big guys before their match. And then we had the match that you mentioned, Kenta and the LA Dojo Boys, Clark Connors and Carl Fredericks, defeated Hiroshi Tanahashi, Shota Umino and Ren Narita in 11 minutes. Great confrontations between Kenta and Tanahashi. But not only that, we also had the first time meeting between the LA Dojo Young Lions and the Japanese Young Lions, and I think this is a self-made story, a ready-made story. You don't have to tell anything around it. You just have to get these guys into the ring, have them fight, and it's going to be a great addition to a really very prospering Young Lions system right now.
Oh yeah, these LA Dojo guys looked really good here, and I really loved what they did with the Japanese ones, like you said. It basically writes itself, you know. You don't have to overcomplicate things, but this is something that you could go to for the future. I don't know how far, I guess, they consider the LA Dojo guys along, because maybe I think the Japanese ones have a little bit of seniority in the system itself.
Yeah.
But like
you
said,
know, the thing about these guys is they don't just... To me, it feels like they don't just emulate the Young Lion stuff or the Young Lion style. To me, it feels like they really got that down, because they trained with Katsuyori Shibata in the LA Dojo. So they are not as far advanced as guys like Umino or Narita on the other side are. But still, I think they got it all down, and they have a good mindset for what they are doing. And I like that they brought them over to do real proper Young Lion stuff too, because they were also on at ringside doing the ring service, the ring crew stuff.
Yeah, you know, it says nothing about their skill level or anything. I just think that the Japanese guys have wrestled longer in the system.
Yeah.
More or less than the other ones. So I think they might have some kind of seniority over them, at least these particular ones, Narita and Umino. But, I'd love to see what these guys can do. Maybe they can expand it. This is something that you could do on undercards, really, in every major kind of tour or show. And, like you said, it just kind of tells the story itself. Much like we saw with the Japanese Young Lions against each other, this just adds another wrinkle to that.
Yes.
Now. So you can do a lot of... It adds more different things you could do to these young guys and let them have, more different experiences.
And we also got the preload of what Kenta and Hiroshi Tanahashi would do one day later.
They look great.
With Kenta showing his attitude towards Tanahashi. That was just awesome.
Yeah, they look great against each other. I was really fired up for that match.
Yeah, exactly. Next one, we had Minoru Suzuki and Zack Sabre Jr. going over Okada and Yoshihashi in 11 minutes. And Dylan, I don't know about you, but when will they finally give us a proper tag team title run for Minoru Suzuki and Zack Sabre Jr., especially with Suzuki not being in the G1 this year anymore? They could easily give them the tag team titles, and both guys would have a much better position on the cards, and they're just a great tag team.
Yeah, I think that would be better for both of them, to be honest with you. Like I said, I've said this before, I'm really not as in love with Zack as a lot of people are in New Japan, and I think they're not either. Like I said, just based on certain things that happened, and he'd be great in this tag team with Suzuki, and I'm definitely not as huge of a fan of Suzuki as a lot of people, so I would love to see, as a tag team, I think they bring a lot to the table, and they would be something different, which would be nice for the division. Really, in all honesty, any version of a new tag team would be great, but that would be one of the better ones you could put together.
Yeah, they've had a tag team run with Wrath Pro before, and I believe aren't they still the champions? I'm not sure actually. But I thought the match was good. Zack beat Yoshihashi with the cross arm breaker, again emphasizing that Yoshihashi is just a fall guy in this situation here.
Yeah.
But then the B block matches started. And they started out with an absolute banger. The thing is about this match, Juice Robinson against Shingo Takagi, it will probably be forgotten in 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah.
But man, they just went out there to have a great, great match. And very early on in the match, I really liked how they put an emphasis on Shingo Takagi being the junior heavyweight, because at first he was not able to get Juice Robinson down with his shoulder blocks. So he had to work really hard to get into the match, and he in the end had to work too hard because he was too exhausted, and in the end couldn't prevent the pulp friction anymore. So in my opinion, a very well laid out story, and these guys, especially Juice too, but you can say it about both guys. They both brought great intensity into this match, and they wanted it, and it totally delivered, in my opinion.
Yeah, I like this. I said on my live review, essentially, I think there are a lot of matches on the show that I liked, but like you said, I think ultimately Shingo's got better in him, and maybe Juice does too. I will say this, though. The match itself was really good. I especially liked the final stretch, like you mentioned, how they built that up. I thought the last couple of minutes, this match really took a step up. But one thing I noted, I didn't say anything about on the live show because I knew we would do this show and I wanted your opinion on it. Because there was this big talking point about how serious Juice is now and everything. But what about this attire he came out in?
Yeah, I don't really think that matches his new serious side.
I think that may have been way overrated. Like that whole serious persona. Supposedly, because what was this? This was like the Undertaker. He's a huge fan of My Little Pony.
Yeah, I don't know what he's going for right now. But the way he worked the match, it really seems to me that he's going to be more serious going forward.
He's always good in ring to me. Like I said, he no matter what his persona is. So I'm all for him anyway. But I just wanted to point that out because I was like, what is this?
But you know, I'm really glad that they just have him be a serious competitor in this tournament and not just go for the arm or leg injury story like he did in the last 2 years.
Oh, that sucked. Like so, I said, but that didn't have anything to do with him being serious, though. That was just bad booking.
No, but the first time around, it was a good story to tell. The second time around, it was just a rewind of what happened the year before. And now...
And it wasn't well executed either.
Yeah, exactly.
And wrapping the hand.
Oh yeah, I remember how we talked about that last year, and we totally hated that. Yes, but still, this year he seems to be more concentrated on working his style than just having to work this or having to sell this injury.
Yeah, I'm fine with it, by the way. That's not even a criticism. Mm-hmm. Like, if he's just the same juice as always, I'm fine with that because he was super over, like, as himself. You know, I don't think he really needed a change more than they don't give him wins a lot. But here he got a good one over Shingo to start off the tournament. I thought Shingo would get the win to start off, but this was one of those that could go 50-50. So, yeah. Totally fine.
In B-Block, there are a lot of 50-50 matches, and we had some on this show, too.
Yeah.
So, the next two matches were really short. 7 minutes and 3:42, and that's really something that they have done well so far in this tournament. Not so much for the first show, there were some long matches, but the two shows from Ottawa, they really paced well, I thought. They flew by, especially the one from today, from Sunday. But here too, we had John Moxley against Taichi. And Dylan, what did you think about this match? I can only say I loved it.
I didn't love it, but it over-delivered my expectations.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was... I thought that was so smartly laid out, where Taichi got the advantage early on mm-hmm. with the sneak attack. And really, if you look at most of this match, it was mostly just Moxley on offense. Yeah. For like, once the bell rang, and it made the match better for it, because we didn't have to see Taichi on offense. So I think the match really did a lot better than it could have been if it had been just a normal match. So I thought they did a really good job. I also like that Moxley got the win pretty distinctly here. Clearly set himself up as a bigger star than Taichi. And I think that was important for Moxley to get a good run going, because I think he has a lot of momentum now in B-Block. He's one of the ones that has a lot of momentum, more than some other people we may get to in the next match.
than some other people. No, I thought that the match length was perfectly done here. You don't want to imagine a 20-minute match between John Moxley and Taichi. The thing is about Moxley, though, this is now the second singles match he's had in, or the third if you count the Shota Umino match, but that was very short.
Yeah.
And he's broken two tables in his three matches, so if he's going to continue doing that throughout the G1 climax, that's going to be something that will be getting old very soon.
I have some concerns about this block, to be honest. That was one of them I immediately thought of, because, like, so far, I think he's passed every test in New Japan so far, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But that was something I noted, is that this style could, especially in this block, and I guess we can talk about it after we're done with this, about the block, but yeah, go on.
Yeah, so the next one, I remember you talking about that on your prediction show.
Yeah, see, I had this on upset alert.
Yes, you did. Yeah. And the reasoning that you gave was 100% true. Because they will probably not, I'm not ruling it out completely, but they would probably not go for a briefcase defense between Naito and Toru Yano if Naito wins the G1 climax in the end, because those Toru Yano wins in the end, they just don't matter. That's just how it is. And I don't know how you feel about it, because I didn't follow your Twitter yesterday. So what's your opinion on Yano defeating Naito?
Oh, this was a match everybody was talking about after the show on my Twitter account. I immediately put up the question of the day before I recorded the live recording. And I just asked, I was like, what did you think of Naito losing to Yano? And to me, here's the thing. On its own, I don't care. Like, Yano beating Naito. Yeah. It really, like you basically said, it doesn't matter. Yes. Like, none of his matches matter. But on the other hand, it doesn't matter. Like, this loss that Naito just took that could have gone to someone else, that really, like, again, in this block, any single person that would have gotten that win over Yano would have benefited much more than Yano did.
Over Naito, you mean? Win over Naito.
Over Naito. But instead of Yano, if someone else had got the win over Naito, it would have been so much more, I feel like, because this means absolutely nothing. And that's really my problem with it. The match, you already know, I didn't like. I don't think it was any good. And I don't understand how anyone... Like, this is something that really confuses me. Like, why people like Yano. But we've been down this road
Exactly. And I don't think we have to go through this again.
He does the same thing every time!
Yes. Like, I'm still fan of his silliness of the matches. It's just... I don't know. I believe it's really a thing that you either like or you don't like. And it's nothing that you grow on. And it's nothing that you start to dislike actively. It's just Toru Yano. It's the act.
I said, but I wouldn't mind like this idea of a comedic wrestler in G1. I said put, Andre the Giant Panda. If you're going to have a comedic guy, Panda can do different things. Like, he doesn't do the same thing every match that he's in. He's an inanimate object, and he does more different things than Yano does.
He usually does the same stuff all over again.
Look at the Tintin Panda match in the ice
rink. Well, that's Tintin. That's not Andre the Giant.
Well, put Tintin in. It doesn't matter. They're pandas. Like, so, or, it could be anybody. Like, but in all honesty, like I said, I just don't... I don't get it, but I think, though... Any realistic person would have to agree that this run really didn't do anything for Yano, and it would have been better served with someone else.
Yeah, it's just you can look at it from both ways, I guess. It's just, it doesn't matter, and it doesn't matter in the end. That's just how you lay that out. He will be in this tournament as long as he's been going to be in New Japan. You either like it or you don't, I guess.
The crowd was into it. I said, I don't mind...
The crowd is totally into it.
Yeah, I just don't understand, like, the thinking behind it. Like, you're talking about the match. I just don't understand. Like I said, the match is what it was. It's not good wrestling, like, in a legitimate sense. And the funniness is where you're going to get, the differences.
Exactly.
But my problem is Yano beating Naito. That's really where I'm coming from in that... Yeah, much like, remember last year when Yano beat Omega? They just did the same bullcrap last year.
Yeah, he beat Omega and Ibushi.
Yeah, and remember how that happened, and I said this on the live show. To me, Sonata had such a hot G1 run, like way bigger than his usual stuff. If he had got that big win instead of Yano, that would have elevated him so much, in my opinion. And they passed on it to give Yano a win. And like, constant argument for Yano is that he supposedly evens out the scoring. Not all of these guys are going to be around on the last day. In fact, very few of them will, if anything.
Yeah, it's going to be two guys that will be alive on the last day.
Well, they might have more than two.
They might have four this time, yeah.
Realistically, only two could win. But they might have some more people around. But the point is, some of these people won't be around. They could easily get this win, and it would be fine. And it would mean more. So I don't like that argument for Yano because I don't think it's true in reality. Because you would have to say every one of these people would be alive on the final day, which is basically impossible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that you could make a point on that from that direction. It's either way. If you look at it, it's just not going to change. They will not change with the Yano stuff they are doing. But I get it. I get it. A win for let's say Jeff Cobb. Jeff Cobb beats Naito. That would be huge for him.
Yeah, perfect pick right there. That's somebody who's not going to be around the last day.
Yeah,
and be and much better. And he's never going to beat him now.
No,
that's another thing that I really dislike about this too. Having Yano win on the first day.
Yeah,
like totally fucks up the whole block.
That
like,
is
for
a
Naito.
Very good point. Now he's going to win his next 7 or 8 matches.
Yeah, it's like it totally takes all. And like to me, if you'd kept this going, because I really think any one of those people could have been there. In my predictions show, I don't know if you listen to this part, but basically I always had Moxley beating Naito.
Mm-hmm.
But second one before the final night could have been literally anybody, and they took it away on the first night. And now they can't really do it anymore because then you have to have all these other guys lose multiple matches.
It's going to be very interesting if they choose to have him drop another fall, how they will go with that.
I think he'll lose to Moxley, but I don't think he'll lose to anyone else. Maybe I'm wrong and they have Moxley and Jay White drop more falls than we thought. And a lot of people on Twitter messaged me saying that this is the loss that would cost him, which would be even funnier to me if that happens. Like, that would be the comedy.
I can totally see Toriano beating either Moxley or Jay White.
Yeah, I mean, Yano is fine. Like I said, he, whoever he beats is whatever. But if Naito loses one, if he's one win out of the finals, and this was the match they point to, that would be hilarious to me if Naito didn't get to the finals, because that would piss so many people off.
Exactly.
Or probably for good reason. Probably for good reason, as I said.
But, you know, the next match was one of those 50-50 cases that you could argue in both directions again. Tomohiro Ishii defeated Jeff Cobb with the Vertical Drop Brainbuster. This is the match that in Dallas had the crowd on their feet because they had such a great preview in this tag match they did. In my opinion, they didn't completely deliver what you probably expected after the tag team match. But still, I was way into this match, both guys just battering each other with elbows, going full force. This reminded me kind of the Okabayashi versus Dillon James match from the Champion Carnival, but the Okabayashi and Dillon James match was much, much more high octane and it lasted 30 minutes. But these guys also went all out for 18 minutes and just didn't really stop at any point, just blasted elbows, blasted chops, threw each other through the air, suplexes, a lot of suplexes. Great stuff from Cobb, and I thought he really got over with the crowd in this match.
Yeah, I really agree with you, and I really said it even on the show again. I think maybe the tag run in Dallas kind of elevated expectations for me to where they didn't really meet them here. It's still a really good match, though. I think another problem is with Ishii, his standards are so high, you have to, you have to really bring out and get something out of him. And I feel like we're going to get two or three more matches from him that are even better than this one, that are, legitimately great. And last year, look at all the great matches Ishii had. This really wasn't as good as those, but still, well worth watching, though. I thought it was a really fun match. And like you said, Cobb seemed to get over with the crowd. We'll see what he can do from here on. I thought this was the best matchup for him. And, I thought it was a really good match, but I wouldn't say it was great. Much like the rest of the matches on this show, actually.
This one and the next match, those were two of the few matches in this tournament where I would actually say they went too long.
Yeah.
I definitely agree. Ishii and Cobb blasting each other in 12 or maybe 14 minutes would have been perfect. 18:33, maybe a little long. But I guess that's the pattern too for the next match here. We had Hiroki Goto defeating Jay White in 21 minutes. And I feel like this is a match that was debated a lot yesterday after it happened. I want to let you talk about it first, Dillon. And there's one question I have, of course. Is this the Goto 1 climax?
Well, I mean, I mentioned this on the show. I'm sure you heard it, but Goto is in great shape leading up to this, and historically, that means somebody's getting pushed when they're in a better shape than usual. I think I may win that battle on the G1 Pickers because you kind of faded Goto in your prediction.
Yeah, that's true.
And I tried to sell you on him, and it's really not anything other than I say this too because somebody was saying, "Oh, I thought the same thing. I thought they'd give Goto a huge push and all this. I'm glad I'm not the only one." And I was like, yeah, but he's always, besides last year where they, crapped on him.
Yeah.
He's really always in the 10 to 12 point range. And him being arrived on the final day really isn't that big of a push, in my opinion. That's he could still easily be off the Tokyo Dome show and, be alive the final day, in my opinion.
Before you go to the match, actually, I want to say one thing. I like to make fun of Hiroki Goto a lot, but that's because he's booked like a total geek. And the other reason being is that I just want to mess with you and specifically my friend Flosh too on this show. So it's not that I don't like the guy. I like him a lot actually because I think he's a very inspiring wrestler and you totally saw that in this match too. And the way that he went, the story that he went to LA and came back now, kind of a redemption story with him. I really like Hiroki Goto. He's not my favorite wrestler of all time, but I was always into his matches, and making fun of him is just a way with to mess with two of you.
Oh, I don't mind. Like I said, see, the thing that everybody doesn't understand is I have no emotional attachment to any of these wrestlers. Like, in all honesty, when it comes to wins and losses, I watch wrestling as a performance. You know, like where I like, you know, and like actually losing can actually make me like you even more in some ways. Like Goto, Yoshihashi, Onma.
Then you're different than Flush, for example, because to him, whenever they do something cruel to Hiroki Goto, it feels like they pull Flush's heart out and show it to him while he's still alive.
I think if there was like 10 years ago when he like really could have been the top person in the company and they did stupid stuff, it bothered me more. But now it's just like realistically, how far can he go at the moment? Because they booked him so bad for so long.
You're numb to it now.
And the thing is, the fans always get behind him. And he looked awesome in this match. He was the best wrestler on the show, like, to me. Yeah. This was one of Jay White's better matches, in my opinion.
Yeah, so I thought that too. I thought that Jay White and Goto, they are a very good pairing. They kind of sometimes do too much. For example, here with this lariat reversal spot that they did, but that's something that happens a lot in Hiroki Goto matches. But overall,
I think White should not, like, he's bad at that style of wrestling, and he adds that into
exactly. They should not do that style in this match or in these matches they have. But
we've seen it with White against other people too. Like whenever he tries his counter wrestling, I feel like it never works out. Even stuff, and they even did stuff with the Blade Runner here that didn't really work. But they did a great spot with the Blade Runner where he countered with the hair grab, which I thought was like the best Blade Runner spot ever.
And this is a totally great segue for me to talk about Jay White as a character, because this hair pulling, this cunning style, this is exactly what you talked about on your preview for that. That is what Jay White needs to be. And there was another point in this match where he kind of wanted to be that guy, but in my opinion, Dylan, Goto ruined it. Because when Jay White was laying on the ground, the English commentary, they took note of it that he was smiling and looking at the commentary. But it seemed to me like that Hiroki Goto didn't really get what Jay White was going for in this moment, because Goto just continued to punch and kick White, and White had to sell that, and the spot was totally blown. It could have been a great spot, because Jay White playing possum and then being able to get a great big move onto Goto would have been a great spot for him and for his character, being a more cunning Jay White. But in this match, we again had Ghetto interfering very early on and later on too. And this overshadows Jay White. Jay White has shown that he is a good wrestler, but the perception of him, and that's my overarching point about the Jay White character that we've seen so far here very early on in this G1 climax, the overarching point is Jay White doesn't need Ghetto. Jay White needs to be a great heel on his own without these interference spots.
Yeah, ideally that would happen. I think when Ghetto turned and got White, I really think what White was doing last G1 didn't work, in my opinion. I don't think it was a good run at all. And I think the fans were kind of not into him, they just weren't into him, to be honest. And when Ghetto turned, I think that totally added so much to White, to the fans. Like, not necessarily to his gimmick, but I think the Japanese fans really bought into him way more when Ghetto got in there.
That is true, but in this match, you could see that the crowd was getting behind Goto when Jay White did his heel stuff. And the heat that he had in this match was great, I thought. But whenever Ghetto did something, it totally fell flat.
Yeah, totally. I completely agree with you. Like I said, that helped to the fans, but it didn't. Like, it doesn't help his matches any. Like, to have the spots, it doesn't really help him either. Like, to be honest with you, I don't really get what they're going for, because if you remember when he won the title over Tanahashi,
yeah,
Gato didn't even cut a promo like to the crowd, and the crowd doesn't understand him a lot of the times. Look at the promo. I don't know if you saw the segment, but it's the one where Goto returned.
Yeah,
Jay was cutting this heel promo, and basically he was going on and on, a rambling, boring promo that he always cuts. And he said something about, you know, like, you're a punk just like Shibata, or something like that. And then the crowd started politely clapping because they heard Shibata's name.
Yeah, exactly. That came across very bad.
Yeah, and he's always like that. Like, so, like, it's not like people are magically going to learn English like that more than usual. So I thought Gato would be a great spokesperson for the live crowd, and Jay could do his stuff for the New Japan World and the backstage and all that. But I guess they think otherwise. And I don't like how they use him at all, and I just don't like Gato as a manager. So he definitely took away from the match to me. And I agree with your point, too, about it going a little bit long. Mm-hmm. They could have chopped off a few minutes of this, even though I thought of the matches, I kind of preferred this one to the other one. And
like, me too.
Kind
of, I thought this was slightly better than the other one.
Yeah. I thought this was the Ishii and Cobb match.
Oh, okay. I was just saying the Goto and White match from May. I thought this one was better.
Oh, I thought this was significantly better than that one. There was no gifts of people making fun of Jay White for being terrible at counting.
That's
he was still kind of clunky at times, but it was nothing that took away from the match.
Yeah, I thought that especially on my feed, I saw people really complimenting Jay White on his performance. So,
yeah, he's good.
Good start from the wrestling perspective. I just think that it wasn't a good start character-wise.
Yeah, this match was more about Goto anyway, to be fair.
Yeah, I
think that's good. He came across like a huge star.
Yeah,
like,
that was my point yesterday, too. And he again proved that he is a guy that can main event a show and that can legitimately win a main event match, and people believe in him. So,
if they want him to, you know, like I said, the fans have never. I really don't understand this point where when people say stuff like, oh, he's not over or whatever. Like, that's so counter to his entire career, basically. Mm. And I would love to see some of these other guys that people rate so highly get booked like he does and see what kind of reaction they get. Because to me, that's the mark of somebody that's really impressive. You know, somebody that can be over despite everything he's gone through. And I think, to be honest with you, his character, I've always said this, his character in general is very, I don't know how to say this, but it's better to Japanese fans than American fans, because I think a lot of the Western fans don't really get into all of his stuff, because it's very like Bushido influence.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I don't think that really resonates with a lot of these Western fans as much as saying, you know, this guy, he's going to make it rain money. Like, you know, that gets over to the crowd more, all gold, cool stuff. Goto, I like his gear, but it's not overtly flashy. But I think he's somebody that's could be something if they want him to be. And I do think he's going to get a big push in this tournament to be alive on the final day.
It even starts with his nickname, Aramusha. There is no real fitting translation for this nickname. It always gets translated as Fierce Warrior, but that doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah, that actually sounds like kind of generic.
Yeah.
Like a Western Honor, you know what I'm saying? I have a shirt of his. He's like the only wrestling shirt I have. I got it as a present. And it says Fierce Warrior on there. So I was like, okay, this is interesting, I guess.
This could be any combat sport.
Yeah. Yeah, really. It could be anybody, pretty much, in general. I remember before is like when he's coming up, a lot of people online translated that as like more like a daredevil warrior, like more than a fierce. They kind of turned it around later on, but either way, it doesn't. He could get a better nickname. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. Aramusha sounds cool on its own, but when you translate it, it sounds not as good.
Yeah. So that's the first show from Ottawa. I thought a very good show. I have it rated with an 8 out of 10, if we're talking cage match ratings.
Oh, cool.
thought it was a very good show.
Which one did you like better, the two, Night 2 or 1?
Overall, Night 1.
Yeah, I think the only thing is, like, I had, if you listen to my ratings, I had all the last three matches of Night 1 the same as the big three on this show, but they just missed a big match that was Ospreay and Archer.
Yeah.
I think, like, if they had switched that match with Tai Chi and Moxley, like, that match, you know, the second night would have been better, but that's just how it goes. But it's still, I thought it was a good show, too. I really liked the first two nights of the G1.
Okay, let's go to Night 3, then. Again, Ota Wild, as I said early on, again, the same crowd that they had the day before. Did you see the undercard tag matches this time?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, then you could guide us through these four matches after I had guided you through the four matches from yesterday.
Okay, so we started off with Hiroki Goto. We just talked about him a lot. He teamed with Tomoaki Honma and Yuya Uemura versus Juice Robinson, Toa Hinare, and Yota Tsuji. Juice again came out with his My Little Pony Undertaker attire. The Young Lions start off, though, and I thought that, to me, the Lions were the ones that carried the match, as you would expect. This was a basic match, nothing you have to go too crazy about, but the Goto and Juice interactions I thought were pretty good. We only got a little bit of them, but I thought they did good with what they had. Do you like it?
Yeah, I'm just here, just muting myself. I thought it was a good match. I especially liked Toa Hinare's interactions with Yuya Uemura. I think Hinare is a great guy. He shows a lot of intensity, and he's a guy that should be in consideration to be in the tournament next year.
Yeah, I wish he was this year. Like I said, I think he could be a very interesting underdog story. I'm a big fan of his, too, so hopefully they have some kind of plan for him in the future. The next match was John Moxley and Shota Umino versus Jeff Cobb and Ren Narita. Both Moxley and Umino came to the crowd here. So Umino is the member of the Shield in New Japan. I think that would be a very cool gimmick for him to do in Japan. Like start Moxley to have his faction and it'd be like a Japan version of the Shield almost. Not like in style, but just that's his faction more or less.
I can see that. You know, the thing is about Shota Umino, it feels weird to have a young lion even wear a shirt of another wrestler that doesn't really fit the mold that the usual young lions are in. But Shota Umino doesn't really fit the mold either because he's been there so long without an excursion and now seemingly gets to go to a different route. So it's very interesting.
Yeah, so this was another fine match. Nothing special, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Cobb got the ball over Umino.
I like how John Moxley and Shota Umino did some double team moves, like the heart attack, for example.
Yeah. They're clearly doing something with Umino and Moxley, and that's kind of cool. But like you said, it's just weird.
Yeah.
And he carried him to the back afterwards, which is also weird. The main match, next match was Bullet Club, Jay White, Yujiro
is back, yeah.
and Chase Owens, he was there too. They faced Ishii, Toriano, and Yoshihashi. This was the setup, obviously, Jay White and Ishii tomorrow too. So these guys came in. It started off with Yoshihashi and Yujiro, and I thought Yoshi did some good stuff early on.
Mm.
It came down to Owens and Yano at one point, and you know how that goes, more or less.
This match was nothing special.
No. None of these matches.
No,
really.
But the undercard from the show yesterday was much better than this one.
Yeah. Let's blow through this last one. Tai Chi, Suzuki, and Kanemaru versus LIJ of Naito, Shingo, and Bushi. Suzuki looked very bored during this match.
Yes, he did. So, you don't necessarily have to check out this undercard. Just watch the undercard from the second day of the G1 and skip this one, I guess.
Hey, did you notice how they didn't... the team still came out to Suzuki's music, not Tai Chi's, the one in this tournament.
Yeah, they have this Suzuki-gun theme they use for every tag match that Minoru Suzuki is in. Interesting.
Yeah, great. Tai Chi also brought out the Iron Fingers.
And I think that's a very good story. You know, they have this Iron Fingers from Hell, Tai Chi basically was given it after, or he picked it up after Takashi Iizuka retired. Was it in June? Was it in when was it?
February.
Right.
Was a long time ago.
I'm way off. Yeah, was a long time ago, and they haven't really mentioned it ever since. He has had it, but he's not used it so far. And now, he has had his first loss handed to him by John Moxley. And after this match here, they specifically showed him, and they put up a photo or two on Twitter, of him smiling while looking at the Iron Fingers. So this gives Taichi another layer, and I think it's very interesting.
Who's he wrestling tomorrow? Do you know?
Oh, I would have to look that up, actually. G1 facts. Luckily, we have our man Flosh with all the G1 facts here. He is wrestling... Let me see. He is wrestling Tetsuya Naito. Right, of course. Yeah, because they...
That's right, of course, yeah. I had him on upset alert for that, too. Mm-hmm. Like I said, the Iron Fingers, okay, so this brings me to a great point I think it's a great point. You may think it's stupid. It's fine. But B-Block, before we get to the big matches on today's show, now here's where my problems lie with this block right now. It feels like every night we're going to have a Jay White match with mm-hmm. Gato interfering.
Yeah.
Yano match.
Yeah.
Tai Chi match.
Yeah.
And we know that's going to be. And Moxley doing the table stuff and his stuff. So really, all of these guys are in the same block. I feel like this could lead to some real unenjoyable shows for me.
As I said with Moxley, it's going to be very old very soon.
Yeah, but you can say that about all those guys.
Yeah, like, exactly. As I mentioned, it's the exact same point for all these guys.
Yeah, exactly. That's half the block.
I really hope that they are conscious about that and change some stuff up, but I'm not very confident.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I have a feeling on this tour, I may be more negative than you on some of these, because that worries me a lot that all of these guys are doing these quote-unquote, I guess, dirty or rough house, I guess you could say. So that worries me. A-Block is more pure outside of one person, more or less.
On the point of being negative... You were very negative on Fale's first match with Evil. What did you think about Fale and Archer?
Now, Fale and Archer was definitely better than the Evil match.
I'm happy that we agree on that.
Well, yeah. Definitely better than the Evil match.
Yeah.
You know, but also, I didn't like it either, to be honest. This match will be totally on the bottom... Yeah, not the tournament, I feel like, for the A block.
Yes.
The right man won, though. I will say that.
Yes,
Giotto was too.
I know. I agree that this match will not be remembered at the end of the tournament. But I think that both guys worked hard here. And I know it's low praise and it's not a high bar to jump over, but Bad Luck Fale is already much better than in last year's tournament. He is at least working, and working harder than he was last year. He took this big superplex spot here, and I thought that was a very well-done spot, especially because Mattia Sami, the referee, also took this spot, and he jumped like there was an earthquake in Ottawa, so that was fun.
That was a huge spot.
Yes.
I think Archer has been really impressive.
Archer has been ultra-impressive in this tournament, and I'm very confident that they have a great run for him lined up, and I picked him to win a lot of matches. So
I think, in my opinion,
he's definitely going to have more than 8 points that he has gotten so far in all his G1 tournaments.
If you look at his... I got to disagree with you, because I think they worked his schedule perfectly to where he would be the one that starts off undefeated and then goes back...
Too. Yeah.
But I still think that's good for him, because he was really... look at where he was as a tag team wrestler. Mm-hmm. And he's already much ahead of that now at this point. I didn't like the Giotto stuff.
The Giotto stuff sucked. Absolutely. Yeah. I don't need this kind of stuff. It's the same thing with White. I don't need it. But still, I thought the match was... I enjoyed it. Because I saw two big guys working hard here, and I made the call. Flosh asked me to if we want to put it in the match guide, and we did. And so far, I think we have a rating that is fitting. We have a 5.25 rating with 1.7 rating, 5 6.0 ratings, and 1 5.0 rating. So I think it's a good assessment.
A lot of people like that.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
I said, it was better than the Evil match for sure. Yeah. I'd say, like, you know, I'd be right around there, maybe a little lower, like a 4 maybe, but like the Evil match was like a 1. So like maybe a 0.5. That I feel like. So this was definitely a big improvement over the Evil match.
Yeah. Well, so this one then went like 10 minutes, and I think the timing of that was okay. Finish, I thought, was very good. Farley went down with the choke slam, and then Archer just sat on him and did the Iron Claw. And I really love how he does the Iron Claw. He just has these great facial expressions and the intensity about him that you totally buy when he sits on you and puts on the Iron Claw. You buy that you would pass out.
Yeah, like, so I'm into all of this with Archer right now. I think he's done a great job, and I was really impressed by what he did in the match versus Ospreay. I thought that was even better than the New Japan Cup match.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you predicted him for a lot of wins, and regardless of wins and losses, I've always like been on his bandwagon. I've always thought he was somebody that could do a lot more. And even when he was in Noah, I thought he did a great job. And here he's showing it yet again. I think he's going to be, regardless of how many points he gets, I think he's going to be one of the standout, breakout stars of this tournament, wrestling-wise.
A very different match was Will Ospreay against Zanada, obviously. Will Ospreay picked up his first 2 points as the junior heavyweight champion. So very early on that the junior heavyweight champion gets 2 points. This match was all about reversals and... In the end, Ospreay beat Zanada with the Stormbreaker, but Zanada was able to reversal both the Stormbreaker and the Oscutter during the match into variations of his Dragon Sleeper, of his version of the Dragon Sleeper. And I thought it was a very well-done match. Great finishing stretch. 17 minutes was okay for this match, I thought. Still, this reversal stuff, again... it's going to be very similar with a lot of Zanada matches again. And again, here, I noted that a lot of people on Twitter complimented Zanada for, or even the match itself, Ospreay 2, for making everything look so effortlessly. And that's a good thing and a bad thing, and we've talked about that with Zanada matches in the past too. Making it look so effortless is not always good because it doesn't bring across that this tournament actually is very demanding and it is a grind, and that should be visible, in my opinion.
Well, in the first match with Sabre, at least he did get that drink of water in the middle of the match. So that was the closest to showing the grueling level of G1 here. That should be a spot he does every match, I feel like. I noticed, does it look like to you, I was saying this to me and Ken were watching the first show, and does it look like to you Sonata might have put on a little bit of weight lately? Because I kind of felt a little bit like that.
Could be, yeah. He looks a little bit bigger than he did last year, I think.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, too. And I noticed he was breathing pretty heavy in that Zach at numerous points. We had the water here. So like you said, you pretty much talked about what I think about Sonata in general. Sometimes it just comes across to me like, you know, they do stuff that looks really impressive, but it's there's no bigger purpose to it. It's just stuff. And that they do, kind of. And a lot of Sonata matches tend to go that way. But athletically, it is an impressive feat a lot of times. I really hated the spot where Ospreay got out of the Paradise Lock in this match.
Oh.
Yeah.
Some people on Twitter, they told me that Sonata applied it differently than usual. I watched the GIF back, and I couldn't actually see if he really did. Nonetheless... Not a fan of that. If you have this move in this promotion, the Paradise Lock, you should either be able to break it or you should either not be able to break it. And there is no in-between with this move.
Right. and this was the in-between. To me, I think that would have been way better if Zach had done that. Because he's like this technical wrestler. Yeah, like the technical master knows everything pretty much about wrestling. I think that would work. But Ospreay, that is not anywhere close to his character. So I would definitely, I don't get that at all. I hate that move anyway, to be honest with you. So, you know, the thing about Sonata, another thing I don't like about him, a lot of his offense just sucks, like, to be honest with you. Like, the skull in looks crappy every time he puts it on. The moonsault looks good. Mm-hmm. He has stuff here and there, but offensively, nothing he does really, like, looks good.
His attempt of the ass cutter looked bad.
Yeah, yeah. And he's got so much athleticism that I don't know why he doesn't have a better moveset. It just, you know, that he really needs to get a new finisher to me, something that looks a little bit more devastating. And I don't know what that would be, but I don't like his moveset at all, and this Paradise Lock is by far the worst, in my opinion. Every time he brings it out, I don't like it. And like you said here, Ospreay just kind of got out of it, so I don't get it. You know, I didn't like it, but the match was good for what it was, though. I think I might be a little lower on it than some other people, but I thought it was a fine match. You know, definitely nothing bad by any means. And I thought Ospreay would win here, to be honest with you, because I noticed, again, following along the pick'ems, I don't know if I pointed this out specifically, but I noticed your prediction for Ospreay was that he would draw Okada.
Yeah.
And I feel like if he's going to be competitive against Okada, he can't start off 0-3, you know, and then suddenly draw the world champion. So I thought Sonata's a great person where he could give up this fall to Ospreay. And these are the kind of wins I think Ospreay will get over, not the guys like Fale, but guys like Sonata, Kenta, Zack Sabre. Like, those are going to be the ones where he can be protected,
I can see that too.
Yeah.
Next up, we had a breath of fresh air. Because, Dylan, we had a 12-minute Katsushika Okada match.
Yeah.
Man. How refreshing. Just imagine the midcard. And I was so surprised when it ended in 12 minutes. But I thought, hey, they just did a match. They had a plan for it. They didn't over-deliver. They didn't go all out. They just had a fun midcard match. And I'm all here for it.
I liked it. You know, like I said, I'm into these short Okada matches, just like the one at the Dome with White. I thought he did a great job in that match. And I thought he did a really good job here as well.
And here I noted that Zack Sabre Jr. kind of wanted to become the Toru Yano of Block A, in the sense that he tried to end this match very early on with some cradle variations. And two of them were very close to a three count, to be honest. I don't know, maybe a different ref would have called the three count on that. Very close. Great stuff there by Okada. And the crowd totally bought into every single near fall that Zack Sabre got on Okada. And that's great too for Zack, that the crowd is believing that he would be able to beat Okada, because he did last year.
Yeah.
But here's some of the dreams of people having Zack Sabre Jr. go for the IWGP Heavyweight title at Royal Quest. They were shut down with Okada being able to defeat Zack Sabre Jr. with the Rainmaker. Sabre tried to go after Okada's Rainmaker arm, but he was still able to free himself and delivered a devastating-looking tombstone piledriver in the match, and that didn't look good at all.
Yeah. Like I said, especially the way Zack sold it, where he like let go, spread his arms out. I was like, what is that?
I don't know.
I was really confused why he did that, but it did look good, so, however you want to call it.
Yeah, so my opinion, very good match, and pleasantly surprised to have Okada not go long.
Yeah, happy about that going long, and I don't know how to say this, but some questionable moments, I feel like, where they didn't have the best chemistry. But I thought overall they pulled it together by the end. And I really liked the time limit, like you mentioned. Or not the time limit, but the time it went. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it was a very fine mid-card match, like you said. I liked it a lot. And I thought Okada would win as well, to be honest with you. So I will say this. You did beat me the first two nights. Ishii beat Cobb the second night as well. But a dominant bounce back for me on this show, because all my predictions came true.
Yeah, as I said, these Block B matches, they could play the difference in the end, because there are a lot of 50-50 things here.
Yeah, I think people worked themselves in their shoot about that Royal Quest.
Yeah.
with Zack
Sabre. Could still be Okada challenging Zack Sabre for the Revolution Pro British Heavyweight title.
Sure. I think that'll be Zack and Ospreay.
Yeah.
Like that's kind of what I'm thinking the main event was. But yeah, so Okada gets the win here. He will not lose to many people, especially not to Sabre.
You were talking about Evil and kind of doubting if he would get any big wins in this tournament, and here he did.
Yeah.
He defeated Kota Ibushi. 19 minutes, and the match was built around Kota Ibushi having the ankle injury that he really has. He showed a photo on it on Twitter, and the ankle looked really bruised.
Mm-hmm.
He was. The good thing about this was that there was like 6 days in between the matches, so he did get a chance to have it heal a little bit. But they still... It was still visible that Kota Ibushi wasn't able to move as fast and quick as he usually does. But he still did his usual stuff, and that's very impressive to me. Imagine having this kind of ankle bruise and just doing your normal sports activities. I couldn't even imagine doing that. So kudos to Kota Ibushi for pulling that through. He did his moonsaults, and he did his knee strikes, and he did everything that he usually does. But Evil was able to exploit that injury. Very early on, he went for leg submissions, and he was also able to exploit that Kota Ibushi wasn't able to move as fast as he usually is. But minor criticism to this match is that in some moments it felt to me like Evil had to stand there and wait for Kota Ibushi to do his move and then to land a reversal, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I also thought maybe... you know, the legwork was great in a lot of ways, but then by the end of it, it was just more like, ah, screw this, let me get to my finishing match. you know, more or less. Like, it kind of dragged a little bit, and then he was just like, all right, let me get to my cool stuff now. You know, like, I hit a big lariat, hits the everything to Evil to get the win. It wasn't any leg-based thing, so. Mm. I thought a fine match, though. Again, I thought this was a good match, too. I was very surprised Evil would win, even with the ankle injury, because like I said, I feel like there's just not a lot of space for him in this block right now, but they swapped my earlier predictions. I thought he would beat Fale and lose to Ibushi, but here he lost to Fale and then beat Ibushi, and that's a great win for him here. And it helps Ibushi's tournament chances, too, because he could be, I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know how much this ankle injury is really affecting him in terms of what he's telling them, what they think about him. But I could easily see him being the one, much like, you know, maybe a Naito in B block, that makes the early comeback, you know, from the 0-2, and I would have won a bunch of matches in a row, more or less. I think he could definitely be that guy in A block.
Mm-hmm. The guy in A block currently is Kenta, leading the block with four... Well, Okada and Archer also have 4 points, but Kenta is leading the block, in my opinion, with two big, big victories over Kota Ibushi, and now over the ace himself, over Hiroshi Tanahashi. And they set this up so perfectly with Katsuyori Shibata being on commentary, who has a deep history with both guys. So there was no person in the entire world that fit this match on commentary better than Katsuyori Shibata did.
Yep.
And while those two were going in the early minutes of this match, I was just thinking what this match could have been 8 or 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And then I thought it would have probably sucked because of politics. So
yeah. That's
true. The match when Kenta was the ace of Noah and Tanahashi was still the dominant force in New Japan, that wouldn't have happened like it happened here. And I'm glad that it happened here, because we got two guys that, while they are not on their physical peak anymore, and that's very generous of me saying that, especially about Tanahashi, not on the physical peak anymore, but their minds are so sharp for the wrestling that they want to do. And Kenta had his first big win over Kota Ibushi in Dallas, but the crowd didn't really take to it. But here, they worked the crowd into accepting Kenta as the invading force and getting behind Tanahashi a lot. And the first 7 to 8 minutes was all about Kenta being dominant over Tanahashi and getting the crowd invested into the main event. And I genuinely thought that this match story was the perfect story for these two guys in their condition right now, because they are just not able to do very high octane stuff anymore. They are still able to do the eventual big time spot like Tanahashi did when he landed on Kenta's knees for the high fly flow, but they will not go out in a way that, for example, Kota Ibushi and Tetsuya Naito will. But man, they are so great in telling stories, and that is why, in my opinion, this was by far the best match of the show.
Yeah, I thought that, first of all, everybody says that about Tanahashi, but in my opinion, because I remember all this really well, I think Tanahashi, if he came out as a mummy with all his injuries, is significantly better than he was in 2009 as an overall wrestler.
Yeah.
Like I didn't like him at all in that run. I thought he was kind of like how I feel about Okada at his worst. He did the same stuff over and over and over. I hated that title run.
So put Tanahashi's mind of 2019 into Tanahashi's body of 2009, and we have the perfect wrestler.
Oh, yeah, he'd be an amazing worker in that case. But I really wasn't a fan of him then. Kenta's the opposite, where I loved him in 2009. He was, like, my favorite wrestler at that point, probably. Now, he still leaves something to be desired, I have to say. Mm-hmm. Even in this match, I really felt a lot of the promise of this match was Tanahashi doing that more than him. Kenta did some good stuff here, though. The go-to-sleep was better than the one on night one, first of all. The first one was a horrible go-to-sleep. CM Punk even would think that was bad. But I like what you said here. I think they made a great point of Tanahashi being the babyface hero for New Japan against the invading outside force here, Kenta. And that's something that nobody really... that was kind of an underrated talking point about Kenta coming into this tournament. Nobody really looked at him as an outsider. It was more just, hey, he's in New Japan now, more or less. He's in the G1, all kinds of new matches. That's cool. But nobody really talked about him like that. And the way they built him up here, I think, adds a great ripple to his character for somebody that really can't go out there and be the Kenta, like, who's great. This Kenta, to me, is not a great wrestler, like, in my opinion. Like, there's nothing that's shown me that I've seen in 5 years, basically. But if they have this storyline with him, I think that could really go a long way to helping him get adjusted and having big matches, because I think it totally elevated this match from what it would have been if they had just had, pretty much like a Dallas crowd, more or less. I think that the crowd really helped this, and I think Tanahashi's planning of this really helped a lot. So I like this match, too. I thought it was probably the best match of the show as well. Yeah. I'm still not sold on Kenta at all, though, I have to say.
Yeah, you know, about these shows, these first three shows, we didn't have a total banger. Well, we had Ospreay and Archer. But overall...
It's the best match so far. Yeah. I think I agree with you.
Yeah. Probably the best match, but overall, the quality of each match has been very high. If you're not a fan of Bad Luck Fale, I can totally understand that, and I can buy that. And there is valid reasons why you're not a fan of him. But still, his match against Archer, I thought, was at least enjoyable. And everything else has been good to very good. So I think the quality overall in this tournament at the beginning has been very high.
Yeah, like I said, I agree with you. I think there's a couple of weak links, to be honest with you, in each block. But besides that, I think every match has been pretty good. I would say the same thing about Moxley and Taichi. That's not really a great match, but I thought it was enjoyable for what it was. Fale, I don't like at all, and I definitely don't like Jado out there with him. So I wasn't into those. But still, even on that show, four of the five I thought were actively good matches and worth watching. So. I like that. B block, the first show, again, three of the five I thought were very good matches. I don't think there's been that big great match yet. Archer versus Ospreay, I think, like I said, was the best match. I think that would be interesting what will overcome it, really. I think there's more good stuff to come, especially with someone like Ishii and Goto, I think are going to be the ones counted on. And Shingo as well, I think, in B block. And once those guys start mixing it up, I think that's when we're going to see the top tier type of matches in B block. And A block, I wonder how much this injury is going to affect Ibushi, because to me, he was the strongest person in this whole tournament, and at least the A block for sure. So I wonder how that will affect him more or less, because he was going to be counted on to have great matches in A block, in my opinion. And if he's taken a notch down, even if it's just a notch, I think that might lower the tip top. Because if you remember last year, there was a lot of bad bullcrap, like with Wyatt, Fale, Tonga, Yano. It all sucked. But they also had high peaks for their big five. You know, the top 5 or 10 matches were like unbelievable, all match of the year candidates in a different year, I feel like. Because you look at something like the main event final was unbelievable. That was one of the best matches in either man's career. The Ishii and Ibushi match was incredible. Goto Ibushi, Ishii Omega.
Yes.
Like all those matches were like, you know, if you're doing a star rating, they'd be like 4.75 stars. Like, you know, something like that to me. So, unbelievable work on that end. But this match, this year, has been more consistent. Yeah. But it's lacked that top-tier stuff that's really going to put it over the top. And I wonder where they're going to get it from right now, to be honest with you, as I look through these blocks.
First of all, I absolutely agree with you. Not these highs that we had last year so far, but we won't have these lows that we had. But it's going to be interesting, because usually around day 5, 6, or 7, there usually are shows that won't deliver as much as the first shows did. But I'm looking at this, and we are going to Hokkaido on Monday with Naito and Taichi and Jeff Cobb and Moxley. Then we have 3 nights of Kuroken Hall, and at Kuroken Hall shows are usually very good too. So I'm looking at day 8 now, Hiroshima Sun Plaza Hall, and even there we have Moxley and Shingo, Jeff Cobb and Jay White, and Tomohiro Ishii and Tetsuya Naito. And Aichi on July 27, we have Okada and Kenta and Tanahashi and Sanada. So I'm really curious where this G1 middle slump will come from.
Yeah, like, you know, every match will have a good show. B-Block worries me, like I said, for the reason I stated before. Mm-hmm. I think too many pranksters in this B-Block, more or less, are shenanigans type of people.
Yeah.
And A-Block, I think they could really have a solid run throughout. Really, Fale is the only weak link to me in that block. I think the others can all get it done to an extent, you know, right now. I really worry about that injury, though, for Ibushi. That's going to be the story of the tournament, I think.
Going on.
But I hope that he can get over this relatively quickly and have some bangers going forward, because I think he's somebody that can definitely deliver it. Like last year, he had an unbelievable run through pretty much every match. So I'd like to see somebody really take a step up. If it's just one match that can get over that hump, it might not be 4, 5, 6, 7 like last year. But if you could just give me one or two big matches, I think that'll be that'll make for a better overall tournament than last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's basically it for this show. We will definitely be back twice again within the next days, Dylan, because we have something in the pipeline. We will be talking about the show from Hokkaido, and we will also be doing a preview of Dragon Gate's Kobe Pro Wrestling Festival tomorrow. We will be back tomorrow. And then there will be another show later this week, where we will not be talking about the G1 Climax, but we will be doing our half-year awards show. And if you want to send in your ballots, you can just go up to Dylan's Twitter. Dylan put up the categories on his Twitter. You can send in your ballots either to our Twitters at Strigger or at Dylan Zero Sky, or you could send in your ballots to japan@mlw.com.
Really appreciate any ballots we get, and we'll love doing that show. I had a lot of fun. That show and the Joshi version I'll have on Pure Heart Pure Lariat will probably come around about the same time. And that was a lot of fun to do, and I can't wait for the version with you. And I'm really happy to have you on for this show. I was lonely these last couple of episodes.
Yeah.
About the so now we've got we're gonna have all the Striga and Dylan that you want in the next episode. So that's good stuff.
That's good stuff. Alrighty. So this has been it for this episode of the Eastern Lariat. I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Sayonara.
This is the MLW Radio Network.